Regenerative agriculture, practices that heal soil, revolve ecosystems, increase farmer well-being, and help balance the climate. Kiss the Ground is supporting farmers, ranchers, and land stewards around the globe in their transition to regenerative land management and inspiring soil advocates along the way to lead this movement. They're also reaching millions of us, including me, with their new film, Kiss the Ground, on Netflix. Hello, I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Impact Earth Food. Every once in a while, and I think it's fair to say rarely, do I start a show with a request to all of you listening out there and ask you to stop what you're doing and sit and be fully present while you're listening to this podcast, because what you're about to learn is really important. And from where I sit, a topic that gives me hope for the future, which I don't always have, hope that we will even have a future. And I am barely not kidding. I'm not being a drama queen. So with us for this next hour is the driving force behind my hope. No pressure. His name is Ryland Engelhart. He is the co-founder and executive director of Kiss the Ground and is the producer of Kiss the Ground, the film on Netflix. He has spent the past 15 years as an entrepreneur and love activist, and we're probably not going to be covering a lot of that on the show, working in hospitality and building a triple bottom line business of organic plant-based restaurants called Cafe Gratitude and Gracias Madre in Southern California. And they're just a few of his accomplishments. So Ryland, thanks for being here. Welcome, a warm welcome from the Mrs. Green's world.
Thank you, Gina, for the warm welcome. Thanks for calling people in to being in full attention. And I love to hear people who have awakened to the possibilities of regeneration as a real clear pathway for hope and for humanity, and that there is a way forward through this comprehension of this topic that we're going to touch on today. And it really is the purpose and the mission of my life is to awaken people to that possibility that was awakened within me, that gave me such an opening, an awakening, a spiritual transformative experience of, wow, I see the way that human beings could play a beneficial role on this planet, and that we can actually heal and regenerate this precious planet that we have, that we only have one of. And, you know, up until the moment of my transformation, it was like life was just, let's do a little bit better and let's destroy the earth a little bit slower, and let's see if we can sustain what we've already destroyed to not destroy everything, was kind of the framework and the view of what was possible. But to be awakened to what regeneration means and what it correlates to as far as the condition and the future of life on planet Earth is truly the most important and impactful and opportune conversation that's happening on the planet, from my view.
If I had a bell, I would ring it. I am kid you not, because that's it. That's really it. And Ryland, I've been doing this for 13 years. So just to kind of set the stage for the rest of the interview, I said to my husband, I really want to watch this documentary. That's what I called it. And he kind of rolled his eyes, because a lot of times the things I want to watch are sad. And I said, no, you are going to love this. Will you watch it with me? And we did. And we both kind of wanted to run away and get on the regenerative agriculture train. He loved it. And he just said, this was so well done. And it's two very different perspectives. I knew I was going to love it, but I had no idea how much. So let's follow up with what you just said about being present and the essence of the work of Kiss the Ground. Because when I did my research and I listened to pieces of your podcast and kind of got to know you better that way, there's some kind of spirit or feeling that's in the movie and your podcast and your writing. What is that? Do you think you can describe that? Because it really matters. I would call it the place from which you come.
Mm.
You have a deep reverence. So what's going on for you when I ask you that question?
It's a great, thank you for that. This is a great opening for that exploration. And yeah, what I can say is that my life path and my family and my upbringing definitely has left me with a perspective and a way of being, which is that the whole purpose of life is to be an expression of love. And how do we be love in the world? Knowing that that is always a choice, that is always accessible because it's a way of being that comes from within. It's not dictated by circumstances or conditions or the materiality of life, that there is this indwelling presence of love that when we can connect to, it gives us this this level of generosity, benevolence, care, service, kindness, contribution. And yeah, I mean, those are all kind of big, boisterous things to say and easier said than done, or, you know, oh yeah, it sounds real nice. But really, you know, what I've seen through my lifetime and, you know, the family of origin that I had the privilege and opportunity to be born into really exemplified that, life is an opportunity to be loving and to be an expression of the divine. And the divine is generosity, abundance, kindness, compassion, acceptance, gratitude, love, worth, creativity, curiosity, and my life has been about how do we practice that, knowing that our life is a picture of our mind and what we can create in our minds, we can build into the world. And, ideas become things. And, you know, Kiss the Ground is an example of me wanting, you know, with the utmost of my being, how can I be useful? How can I be helpful? How can I create transformation that makes a difference, that allows for healing and togetherness and unity and nourishment and connection and community and mutual benefit? And when I discovered, and you know, that's kind of been my lifelong mission. I have a tattoo on my forearm that says "Be Love," because I knew at one moment that was the most important thing to be as a mantra, as a reflection, as a reminder. And I knew that, like the film Memento, that we have these ideas and these insights and these, you know, intentions, and then they vapor, like they disappear like vapor. And then we kind of are scratching our heads, like, what are we doing here? What's happening? What is this all about? And I was like, all right, well, how can I leave myself a sticky note that'll perpetually be there to remind me of who I am and what I'm doing? And in turn, that's why I wrote Be Love on my forearms facing myself, to remind myself, oh, that's what you're doing. And so me and my dad, when I was probably about 23 years old, we went and got those tattoos in San Francisco together. First time either one of us had ever gotten a tattoo. We went down to Potrero Hill, in the Potrero district of San Francisco. And I think it was like 26 in Potrero, and went to something Java and Ink tattoo joint. And a big Samoan man gave us these little Be Love tattoos on our forearms.
I just love it.
It was really an initiation and a commitment from, you know, within our family lineage of who we were going to choose to be as men in the world and what would be a beautiful expression of masculinity as this remembrance and this steadfast knowing and conviction that we were and are and connected to an infinite source of love within our hearts, and that we get to choose to generate and be that in the world and express that through all that we do. And Cafe Gratitude was an expression of that being love as a business, as a restaurant. A film that I made called May I Be Frank was another expression of that that love and in action, that where we took a man through a 42-day process of healing his relationship to himself, healing his eating habits, his thinking habits, his family dynamics, his relationships, and he gets well through a process of being cheerleaded and supported by these young men and this 54-year-old man who's over 300 pounds and kind of depressed and on antidepressants and has hepatitis C, and really gets birthed by these young men supporting and loving him through his journey. So, and then that leads up to that. Actually, that film is what brought me to New Zealand, which brought me to this being a part of this panel discussion called "Can Human Beings Sustain Themselves on Planet Earth?" In New Zealand, in Auckland, back in 2012, I got invited out there to show the film May I Be Frank, and also to speak on sacred commerce, which was the business, or is the business philosophy of Cafe Gratitude. And while I was there, I got to witness this conversation called "Can Human Beings Sustain Themselves on Planet Earth?" And 5 out of the 6 experts on the panel said no. We're heading into the 6th mass extinction, and it's way more dire than we're even informed that where things are, and it was a very emotional and you could hear a pin drop in the room, and then the last person who spoke was a guy by the name of Graham Sait, and he basically painted this picture of understanding the way that humus works, which is healthy, rich, alive soil with soil organic matter and life, biology. And he described that the way we manage land has one of the greatest impacts negatively on our planet through our agriculture. And yet, if we could change our view and see how we could work with nature's technology, that we could actually take the 410 or 15 parts per million that was, I think at the time it was 10, that we could take that problem of too much carbon in the atmosphere, and that we could actually turn it into a solution, a carbon glue, and we could glue our soils back together and heal our soils, and that everyone who eats could participate in that revolution of not only healing their bodies with healthy food, but also healing the land through regenerative agriculture. And that blew my mind. It was just like I had been an advocate for sustainability, for plant-based diets, for organic agriculture, even knowing about biodynamic agriculture, and I grew up gardening, and I thought I kind of knew the rap, and I saw a connection being made that kind of connected a circle in my mind, which truly was like the world became flat, went from flat to being round. I saw how there was a possibility of how we could actually regenerate, heal, and cycle back to balance versus just slowing down the Titanic as it heads to the inevitable iceberg. And I saw, there's actually a mechanism that has, been developed over 500 million years, photosynthesis, and plants, trees, and grasses working with soil, microorganisms, and animals. And that if we could actually get in line and help that process, we could actually expedite this regenerative effect on our planet, and that everyone who eats could actually support that revolution. There's never been a better framework and more intuitive, more possible, more relevant, more helpful thing to be doing with our lives as human beings. And it just was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is hopeful. This is true. This is real. It was literally like a moment of where people describe samadhi, the spiritual experience of, you know, 1,000 suns being exploding in your heart and mind. I literally had a samadhi experience of seeing the truth and the possibility around this idea that it was just being presented. And I could see in that moment the truth of it. And I could also see, oh my God, the world could wake up to this message. And again, you know, one thing I like to always say in this moment is really that this is not a new understanding. There is an understanding of our, you know, oneness and our interconnection and our interbeing with nature, with life, that has been held by many, you know, ancient and traditional and indigenous, you know, land-based, earth-based, connected cultures that have understood this narrative, this understanding, this worldview. And, you know, what was being awakened for me was in this moment, you know, a version of it and how it ties to agriculture and how it ties to carbon and how it ties to climate change and how it ties to our food system and how it ties to, you know, a solution that could be globally relevant that was at that moment relatively unknown to the mass or pop culture. And there was very little communications and, media or content or education that, you know, connected these dots in a very clear, concise, effective way that could educate the masses. And that's really what Kiss the Ground has, you know, took on since that moment, almost 7 years ago, that then led to me, you know, coming back to LA to my restaurants. And essentially, I just became an evangelist for soil and soil health. And everywhere I went, I just would talk about this and started gathering my friends and colleagues in my living room every Monday to be a working group with the intention of how are we going to get this message out to the world. And that was the origin and birth of what became Kiss the Ground, which is a nonprofit and in turn inspired and, you know, co-produced along with Josh and Rebecca Takal, the filmmakers, the film that we now know and love that's released on Netflix.
So it's just kind of fun having done this for so many years to get a guest like you. And then to look at the prep that I did and how I can literally just sit here. And when I ask people to stop what they were doing, to press pause, to be fully present, I didn't know this was going to happen and you were going to share all that. But that's exactly why, because your work, the website, the movie, there is truly a deep reverence for life. It reeks that. It oozes out that, whatever. And that's what I wanted to get to. So the other part, as I was listening, is I went on a trip to the rainforest. Before I did the one with the Pachamama people, I went on another trip years before that. And that planted the seeds for me to start the Mrs. Green's World movement and to become an environmental educator. Totally switched what I was doing. So when you talked about going to New Zealand, it was a life-changing moment. It was a game changer for you. Just hearing that one person, and in this very grim world of climate change, which it can be, that is the kind of thing that we strive for. I want to talk about hope and possibility and change. And the thing that I wanted you to know from me is that the deep reverence for life and love that you have, it comes through in everything I looked at. So that's what I wanted to share. Now, I don't want to do a lot around, because I just want to say, okay, Ryland, take it away. But the movie itself,
yeah,
has awakened millions of people around the world to the possibilities of regenerative agriculture. You took all of that you just described to us and people that you have met along the way and your life experiences and produce this magnificent film. And oh, by the way, got Woody Harrelson to narrate it. Was what you just described to us a lot of the backstory of how you came to make the film to share with the world?
Well, there's a miracle. You know, there's a thread There's a thread of the miraculous through all of it and through everything when we are aware of it and awake to it. And sometimes I'm totally numb and dead to the miracle of life.
And I got it. You're right.
And sometimes you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe the miracles that are occurring and the connections and the serendipities and the kismets and the
right.
Yeah. When I think about the story of this commitment to being love, and that led to this film that I said, May I Be Frank, which then led to me going to New Zealand, which led to me discovering this, you know, this conversation and awareness and understanding of regeneration, and then coming back and, you know, moving to a little bungalow home in Venice. And, you know, the people who were moving out were some environmental filmmakers. And, I asked them if they wanted to make a film about soil and regeneration, and they were like, not interested. But my passion and enthusiasm, for it definitely stuck with them as a seed. And then they ended up calling me 6 months later, and that was Josh and Rebecca Tikal. I moved into their house.
You gotta be kidding me.
I built the nonprofit organization in their garage, which they had built their environmental film studio in. Basically,
I love the story.
The chapter started with, you know, them building their whole environmental life in this little home, and then that led to me, you know, basically taking a relay race with that little home, which was then the home that, you know, we founded Kiss the Ground and built the organization.
Oh, Lord.
And then we ended up collaborating to, produce this film together, and carrying the banner and the name and the message of the organization and of the awakening that we had come to and continued to understand and investigate and communicate and educate around. And, you know, so yeah, I mean, the film, it started off with like, all right, how do we raise money? And, you know, Woody Harrelson has been a family friend of ours for, you know, probably, I don't know, 20 plus years. I went to my first activist rally, picket rally in San Francisco probably 20 years ago with him, and saw him read a poem in front on a stage, and, you know, saw his commitment to the environment and his commitment to love. But I also saw, you know, his anger and frustration and rage against, you know, the system, and, you know, saw his, you know, his challenges, and, you know, him being blackballed in Hollywood for being a, you know, and kind of, you know, toning his whole thing down, and turning his activism down. And then, you know, I'd see him once a year, and he was always inspired about Cafe Gratitude and was investor in Cafe Gratitude and supporting what we were doing there, and was always interested in what we were up to. And, you know, I started seeing him, and I would tell him about regenerative agriculture, and he would you know, get it a little bit, and get some inspiration. And but he was, you know, he'd been a lifelong vegan too. He's a vegan. And so the regenerative narrative is definitely not, the lockstep vegan narrative. It's
right.
It's a different, right. It's a different, you know, it obviously is a narrative of people who care about life and care about the planet and how do we heal and regenerate, but it isn't the vegan narrative. It really is like, wait, the architecture of nature, and the way that soil has been built, you know, in the most healthy grassland ecosystems around the planet, were a combination of grasses, microorganisms, and, you know, large herds of grazing animals that are being moved by predators in this larger system. And that's actually that flow of life, that big energy flow, is what has led to the healthiest and most rich topsoils on the planet. So if we want to, you know, just do sort of agriculture as we know it today, where we put a plant and, you know, we do a monoculture of, you know, corn, soy, hay, and then we, you know, we harvest that cash crop, and then we till, and then we plant, and then we fertilize, and then we pesticide, and then we fungicide. You know, ultimately that system, that land becomes degraded and becomes unusable, desertifies. And so animals are essential in the architecture of continuing to create and regenerate healthy ecosystems. And so, you know, whether you look at that at a large scale or, you know, a 1 or 5 acre plot of land, animals are an integration or an integral part of cycling nutrients through a system that we're working and using as a production system for producing food. If we want it to be resilient and regenerative and sustainable, it, you know, animals are an essential component ingredient in that architecture. And so, you know, there was actually a lot of people that were concerned, like, why is a vegan the narrator of this film? But, you know, at a high level, to me, it was like it's a nod and a bow to, can't we bow to our, you know, our superlative orthodoxy of perfectionism and our idealism to, no, this is actually a larger context of healing and well-being for the planet. And yes, there is life and death in that system, but there is life and death in every plate of food, no matter what plate of food, whether it's plants or animals. To produce a plate of food is the participation in death. And whether you want to go how micro or macro, or, you know, what level you want to like investigate, there is death on that plate. And that is the very nature of, you know, the architecture of the universe. Anything that's alive sustains based on the decomposition and the death of something else. And so we just philosophically have to deal with that is reality. You know, at what level we want to investigate that, or we want to explore that, or ignore that, or, you know, there's lots of places to stand that are beautiful and noble. But the, you know, the opportunity of the film is really, you know, can we come together around this universal idea of how we can most effectively not just sustain and not just do less harm, but how can we actually regenerate the degraded ecosystems on the planet? And animals are our partners in doing that.
Well, simply put, it's about the circle of life, and all those things you mentioned are part of the circle of life. Cows are, and pigs are, and chickens are, and plants are, and soils are, and microbes are. So to me, when you look at the film, there's no sense of being preached at or told to. It's a sense of being drawn in and seeing the beauty of what happens when you go back to the way the things were or should be or have never been for a really long time, because you're not soaking the soil with Roundup and other toxic pesticides and Roundup ready crops. And I mean, it's beautifully told, in my opinion, without judgment. And a lot of people in the environmental movement, you know, we're all for it, but then people balk a little bit, don't preach to me, don't judge me. And this movie has none of that. You want to learn more, because to me, when I'm looking at it through the lens of, this is a major solution to the climate crisis, major. Major, major, major. So that's part of like my backstory. And I mean, we're going to get to another question about that. But when you, I can just see Kelly calling me after this show and saying, you never really explained or got Ryland to explain what regenerative agriculture is. And you kind of danced around it and touched it. But what's the Reader's Digest version of what regenerative agriculture actually is? And why is it a major solution to the climate crisis? It's a really great question, and I know you can answer it.
Totally, thank you. Yeah, so, what is it? Regenerative agriculture is agriculture system, a food production system, where the ecosystem that is producing those calories, that food, is also simultaneously regenerating resources, regenerating soil health, fertility, regenerating biological diversity, plant diversity, wildlife diversity, the ability for water to be more effectively utilized, to be able to infiltrate into the soil, the ability for, it really is a system that is getting healthier year after year, while producing a crop that is also nourishing people, communities, society. And at a practice level, you know, it's many things, and I think the best people who are articulate on this topic really oftentimes say, you know, context is everything. So it's not, you know, without context, it's, you know, we need to understand what is the context, but beyond understanding that there's nuances of context, really, what is it? It's making sure that we are keeping the soil covered. So most agriculture, they till the ground and then they leave it barren, nude. You know, there's a quote that my father uses, that the Mother Earth, referring to, the mother is modest. She likes to be kept covered. So the mother, our Mother Earth, soil, the body of creation, is you know, the skin of the earth is soil. And when we put the plow through it and we till it, we destroy the biological and the internet. There's an internet within soil. There's all these connections, synapse connections of fungi, and the ways that the roots interconnect underground. There's a whole life happening underground. And when you take a plow or the tilling equipment through that land, you ultimately destroy and start to deteriorate and break down that biological life, that life beneath the ground. And that happening, you know, over a long period of time, soil begins to die, degrade, and soil becomes dirt, which then becomes dust and blows away and erodes. You know, so I went way deep on one, but essentially the basic five principles is keeping the soil covered. So keeping the soil covered is meaning like you'd put a cover crop. When you're not growing a cash crop, you're growing some kind of other species, a diverse species of grasses or other plant species that are feeding the soil. So you're essentially, you grow your cash crop, and then when you're not growing your cash crop, you're feeding your soil so that you can grow a cash crop again. Because every time you grow a cash crop, you're skimming some cream off the top. So if you're not putting cream or gas back in the tank or money back in the account, you're going to ultimately deplete that system. So when you're keeping the ground covered, you're keeping the ground in place. The roots are feeding. This is another key piece, which is really understanding that if soil's alive and it's full of microorganisms, and those microorganisms are a living thing, and one thing that all living things need is they need to eat. And how do they eat? They eat from the carbon sugars that plants are giving to those microorganisms. And the way that carbon, in the way that we've described, how do we have plants and photosynthesize be a tool for reversing climate change, is the mechanism and the way that works is plants have little mouths on their leaves, stomatas, and they're sipping in carbon dioxide, and they're combining that carbon dioxide with water that's being generated by the sun, the energy from the sun, and that is becoming carbohydrates. And it takes those carbon and hydrogens and it builds their bodies, the plants' bodies, with those carbons and that water. And then it also gives somewhere between 30% and 70% of those carbohydrates into the root system, and then exude out of their roots these carbon sugars, and they feed the microorganisms in the soil in exchange for minerals that then can be absorbed and create the health and the wellness of the plant. So there's this great exchange that happens underground where the carbon sugars are being fed to microorganisms, and microorganisms, the symbiotic relationship is that they will partially digest and make minerals accessible, and the ability to be assimilated and uptaked by those plants. And without that exchange and without that relationship, roots don't have access to the amount of minerals and trace minerals and nutrients that are available in the soil. And so it's an essential exchange, and it's the essential exchange that also is the mechanism that is pulling carbon out of the atmosphere and then having it be stored in the ground, in the soil. So again, I keep on trying to get to the five principles, and I go into like a long.
That's what happens when you're passionate about things. It's me. Like you just go off the script a little bit, but it's like I'm loving it because this is what's real, and your passion is so clear about what it is. And the other thing I want to interject is that when you're watching the movie, you get this. But it's in the framework of storytelling. And that, to me, that's the success of the movie. It's all a story and other people's stories and how you got other farmers to listen and their stories. So it's you hear this, which is a lot of pretty, it's like heavy duty detail, it's science. But when you're watching the movie, the beauty of what you can observe and learn and begin to understand is transformative. That's part of my movie review. So go on.
So keeping the ground covered, so that we've gone into that with the cover crops. And then the second one is the least amount of mechanical disturbance. So doing low or no amount of tilling and tilling the ground. And that's kind of a strange thing because kind of the beginning of time, agriculture, from the dawn of time, you know, the plow is kind of the symbol of breaking up the ground to plant the seed to, grow the crop, grow the food, and, you know, that is agriculture. And, you know, there's a beautiful, wise farmer and writer who speaks on natural agriculture, a guy by the name of Wendell Berry, who said, The plow will kill more men than the sword. And that's a slight, I don't know exactly if that was exactly the statement, but essentially what he's saying is that when we destroy our soils, we destroy the basis of life for civilization to exist. So yes, wars kill people, but when we destroy the basis of life for a civilization, which is soil, we destroy the entire civilization. And I think there's 25 or 26 known civilizations that totally extinguished themselves because they destroyed the soil that they depended on for life. And least amount of mechanical disturbance. And then the next one is animal integration. So I spoke about this a little bit, but, you know, when we industrialized in the Green Revolution, we industrialized agriculture, we kind of separated, animal, people who are tending to animal ranchers and people who are growing crops, and we separated those two. And when we did that, We then broke the nutrient cycle for how soils could continue to regenerate. And without the animals on land, we had to go to a synthetic model of fertilization with the NPK, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus as the three main nutrients that you need for plant growth. But you can have, a lot of growth, and, you know, we had the Green Revolution and we were producing lots of calories, and there was some, you know, it was like a revolution or a revelation that we could, expand the amount of calories that we're producing. You know, what we didn't see, the unseen consequences, was kind of the silent spring of, you know, what starts to happen to our soils, what starts to happen to our human health with the depletion of minerals and nutrients that are coming into our food, which then come into our bodies. The animal integration, when we look to a healthy ecosystem, it needs to have the integration of animals supporting and cycling nutrients, because that's part of the architecture of nature. So diversity, you know, the diversity piece is key. When you have a diverse, diverse species of plants, whether it's in a rotation of a diversity plants or a diversity of plants that are happening simultaneously on one paddock or one field of land, you're having all this different kinds of exudates and carbon glues and sugars and enzymes and things that are being released from all these different plants into the soil. And then that creates a diversity of life under the soil. And in turn, that creates this healthy, resilient system. Another principle is really understanding the importance of perennials, and that perennials are trees and bushes and plants that are only planted, you know, once, and then you can harvest, and they produce food for many years before they need to be replanted, refertilized, added more pesticides. So they just require much less disturbance, much less chemical input, fertilizer, and they continue to produce food year after year. So there's many other principles, but those are the five main principles.
So it speaks volumes about there is so much science behind this and why it works, and going back to the way things should be instead of, you know, monocrops and just all of the things that we have done wrong to strip the soil of everything. I mean, I remember interviewing someone at least 10 years ago who had a microbial compound called Bactafeed, and all it did is when you put it into the onto the land, it restored the land to its natural state, because pesticides and insecticides, even fertilizers, they kill it all. I mean, it's like, it's unbelievable if you just let it be healthy. So I don't want to go off on a tangent either, but it makes me very excited. So the next part of this is there's all the beauty of regenerative agriculture. And I just have to mention how thrilled I was to hear you showcase and highlight the work of people like Alan Savory, who's been a guest. And of course, if you are living in this world and don't know about Drawdown, Project Drawdown, or Paul Hawken, you might want to, you know, shore up on your environmental intelligence, because he, you know, Drawdown has created a ripple felt around the world. And Maria Rodale, I'll never forget when somebody said, you know, you should look at what the Rodale Foundation is doing. And I did. And that was, I think I interviewed her maybe even 10 years ago. And I was thrilled to see all of their work highlighted in the film. And I'm sure they were equally as thrilled. The point I want to make with this is it kind of was a coming together of important ideas, important practices, people doing the right thing already, leading the charge, as it were, to make some of this happen, which we all benefit from. So then that's one piece. A lot of times in the sustainability movement, people say, oh yeah, but it's so expensive. And what I love that Kiss the Ground addressed is regenerative practices heal the soil, they revive ecosystems, they increase farmer well-being, they help balance the climate, but they also can help farmers make money more consistently. Isn't that it's not an oversimplified way of putting it. It's the truth. If you go through it, you're going to have healthier everything. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. I mean, if you really get into the, if you really dig down into the nitty gritty of it. And again, you know, it's a complex, it is simple and it is complex because you're talking about managing a living ecosystem, and with there's many, many different layers and parts to that ecosystem. But if you really get down to it, the system that we're talking about is the system of having a healthy body. And when you have a healthy body, you don't need to spend a lot of money on medical care, doctor's visits, all these different things, because your body is resilient, it's healthy, it's self-organizing, it's self-healing, it's self-correcting. And that is the same thing. When we get our ecosystems, our regenerative farms, to a state of resilience and balance, they don't require the chemical inputs. They don't require the insecticides, the fungicides. They don't require all these inputs because you've actually gotten the system to be healthy, resilient, and actually having all that it needs, so that you don't need to bring in excess inputs from off the farm. And in turn, you know, the biggest expense for farmers is those off-farm inputs that are, you know, the price of, excessive fertilization and the excessive,
right.
You know, as you said, Roundup, the herbicides and the all the different chemical inputs that over time go up in price. And in turn, you have a lot of farmers who are making less money. I don't know the data, but it farmers are making less money now than they were 15 years ago. And you know, farming as a profession has the highest suicide rate of a profession of any other profession.
I know. Oh, I know.
And you know, it's because, you know, they're going down a road where it continues to get bleaker and bleaker. And again, it's, you know, I don't want to say as like this, you know, California activist advocate, like, hey, I
cool guy.
Yeah, yeah. I know and have it all together. I know what you guys know. I don't know shit, but I know a little bit that there is people who are demonstrating this possibility in a way that is sensible and real and practical, and actually is creating a much better life for farmers who are growing, you know, small or large plots of land, and they've been able to, you know, go down this journey. And well, it's, you know, there's definitely, you know, in any transition, there's a rocky transition because, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, and it's a new path. But what I do know is that the way nature works and the way that a system can be resilient and healthy, and when you get a piece of land that is operating in that way, that is been regenerated and is resilient and is balanced, and it has a natural immunity to, you know, pest pressure, and, you know, pressure from, from underground as well as from above ground, and you have more nutrients in your plants, which means you have more nutrients if you're feeding animals, you have more, you know, better health for your animals, which means much less, disease and much less illness and much less need for pharmaceuticals, because pharmaceuticals, the number one use of antibiotics in this country goes to our livestock industry. And when we can get healthy animals on grasses and eating from a biodiverse you know, system. They need far, far, far less inputs, and they're much more healthy and resilient. So it really is an intuitive situation where when you have a healthy body, a healthy system, a healthy piece of land, everything that's coming from that land is going to be healthier, and it's going to require much less synthetic inputs, which are often the biggest expenses for farmers.
And it just, you know, it goes on and on and on about the subsidies and how much money as a taxpayer I am paying to farmers to help them fail, in my opinion, to do things that are unhealthy. And this is all about winning, all of us winning. Healthier food for us, less toxins in the soil, in the watershed, for the birds. I mean, the list goes on. I remember when I interviewed Maria Rodale, she said, well, Gina, if you have organic, if you're growing things organically and the soil is healthy, you don't need any of those things, because healthy soil doesn't attract all of those birds, or I mean the bugs and the all of those things. So it was another eye-opener for me years ago. So fast forward a little bit, with the film and with an entirely renewed respect for the clear and present impacts of climate change, the danger with the new administration in Washington. And, you know, I kind of want to press pause here on myself. When I finished the movie, James and I sat and talked, and I said, why aren't we doing this all across the country? It makes sense financially. It makes sense in every way for the health of the planet, for the health of the human beings that exist. So will this even show up on the screen for the Washington people that are caring much more and talking about and doing things to address climate change? Where does regenerative agriculture sit on the priority list? And I have a personal interest in asking that because a friend of mine is the head of Mark Kelly's office in Arizona, in his Southern Arizona office. And I want to talk to my friend Ron about it and say, I want you to find out what you can. Is there funding for this? Who's listening? Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't there more policy changes or subsidies for farmers that want to change?
Yeah.
Was that a long question, Ryan, or what?
It was a great question. And I'm so grateful that I have a hopeful and kind of inspired answer. And that really is that this moment is a huge, huge moment. It's a tipping point moment for, you know, with this new administration and their awareness of the importance of climate change, their awareness of, you know, the, you know, human health epidemic, which, you know, obviously we're being, you know, ravaged. You know, there's obviously the impacts of COVID-19 that are speaking, you know, collapsing our economy, and you know all the you know those that have lost their lives, that you know it all comes, you know, who is dying? People who are dying have, you know, compromised immune systems, and you know there is a direct through line thread from our food system to our human health and our immune system. And so yes, there is an amazing moment that we have right now. And here's the good news. So we have a policy department within Kiss the Ground, the organization, and we have been sharing the film with as many political figures and representatives across the country over the last 3 months. And we were able to get the film to some senators and some House of some representatives folks. And the new chair of the House Ag Committee, Representative David Scott, saw the film, was so inspired by the film that his first meeting with the House Ag Committee in 2021 was just two Thursdays ago, and it was a six-hour hearing, and one of the sort of cornerstone moments or pieces of the meeting, I'll back up and say that the meeting was labeled or named agriculture, climate change, or agriculture and forestry and climate change. And basically, subtext was, can agriculture regenerative agriculture be a solution to climate change? And the Kiss the Ground film trailer was shared in that hearing, and then Gabe Brown from the film testified and answered more questions than anyone else in the whole panel about, you know, what people were learning about and what was being seen. And so there's a huge, huge, huge moment to where we can get policies and legislation that is supporting regenerative agriculture, that is subsidizing, that is creating incentives. And, you know, we are deeply committed to helping catalyze that, to convene the leaders, to bring the experts, to validate the science by bringing the right, you know, stakeholders to the table, so that we can, you know, we can go in this direction. And, you know, one of the campaigns that it were, you know, in the early phase of, but that I'm really passionate about is called Regenerate America. And it's a campaign to garner 10 million signatures to reform the 2023 Farm Bill.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Which has never been reformed. We can make believe it has, but it really never has. The things they do in it makes me want to throw up. But that's okay. And just so people know, and I know everybody listening to this is going to watch the film, Gabe Brown, he's just like the guy next door. You want to know him. You want him to be your neighbor. He's a pioneer of the soil health movement. And he's just going around almost door to door talking to people about why regenerative agriculture and soil health is an answer for the future. It just, like I said, when I started out, it gave me hope. So two more questions, because I think you and I could do like a marathon. I have like 10 more or 20 more questions, but we can't do that because of people's attention spans.
Yep.
But I just think that it's really important. One comment is that you're not just doing the film. You have a fund to help people that want to do this or organizations, a Kiss the Ground Impact Fund. So I wanted to mention that.
Yeah. So, yeah, let me just mention, you know, that the organization started first. You know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? The organization came first and inspired the film. And there's a book, Kiss the Ground, the book, which Josh DeCal wrote.
Yeah.
Which was kind of the field notes of the creation of the film. And it's great. It's a really inspiring, awesome book. The organization is working in four different ways. We're working in creating media that inspires and awakens people to understand regenerative agriculture as a possibility.
Love that.
So we're creating, you know, consumer and lifestyle behavior changing, you know, content that changes people's narrative and understanding. We have an education program, which we call our stewardship program, which is basically creating courses and content that turns people from, you know, kind of like, oh, I've heard about regenerative agriculture, into how do they become an advocate where they're actually actively, you know, using their voice to promote, to spread, to make connections, to build this movement. So we have a course that we launched simultaneously with the film in September called the Soil Advocacy Training Course. And I think there's over maybe 3,500 people in 30 countries around the world that have done the course. And, you know, it's remarkable what people are creating and what people are doing out of this course, because they come out of the course and they're just lit up, they're on fire, and they have all this knowledge and this ability to communicate. You know, one example, a woman who was a farmer in Canada who went through the course is now, you know, she did a TED Talk, and now she's brought language to legislation in Canada, which is in development on the largest piece of legislation supporting regenerative agriculture that has ever existed globally. That it's like a $300 million piece of legislation to support regenerative agriculture. So we're creating an army, a cavalry of advocates. Whether you're, you know, a home gardener or a teacher or a concerned citizen or a mom or a student or a farmer or a business leader, you know, we want to get the voice of this movement in powerful people all over the world so that they can, you know, work their angle. So that's our education and advocacy program we call Stewardship. And then we have our farmland program, which is a program designed to help farmers get the technical training that they need to make the transition. And so we work with partner organizations to provide scholarships for farmers to have the best farmer trainers or rancher trainers to train them in these practices so that they can implement them on their farm. And then we've provided a mentorship program over the time that they're in transition over a 3-year period that they, you know, can be held in support. And then there's another aspect, which is providing soil testing. And, you know, so we've been investing in farmers getting the education and support they need to make their transition. And that's our farmland program. And then we also have a policy program, which is what I spoke about a little bit about, which is just that we work with local policy in LA, as well as in the state of California, as well at a national level, really convening people with the experts that we've connected to and, you know, trust us in the movement and the educational materials that we've created to convene experts and to have them understand this message. And then so that they can be convinced and understood that this is the direction that we need to go. And then, you know, so yeah, those are the programs. And then obviously we have a huge, sort of hub of resources on our website, which is really just from advocacy to farmers, to consumers, you know, how can I support the regenerative movement? And we have something on our website called Find Your Path, which is a tool that's kind of like a little wizard that you can put in your interests and your career and what you do and what are the resources that could support you down your path to supporting the regenerative movement. We are a 501c3 nonprofit that depends, you know, on donations. And, you know, so we also have a membership program where you can be a member for as low as $5 a month and support our work, which leads to, you know, farmers being transitioned, advocates being trained, media being created, and policies being changed to support regenerative agriculture.
So you've got it all. I mean, it's like, and that's how I felt when I looked at it. So usually I try to remember it at the very end. We want to have a call to action. And if our listeners did what I requested and sat and were fully present, the call to action is clear. Watch the movie, get engaged. And I want to say to you, Ryland, to stay in touch with us, not you personally, but your team, because we are movement makers. We had almost 1 million listens last year, and our numbers this year are already amazingly growing because we are all about impact as well. It's not just a podcast. We're environmental educators. So before I give my final reflection, is there anything else that you would like to add that I didn't cover? I have many questions I didn't get to ask, but I think we have to be mindful of the time and have you back again someday.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'll just say, join the regeneration. It's the most exciting thing happening on the planet is this idea and this way and this worldview of how we can heal and regenerate our planet, supporting a food system that is healthy for ourselves and healthy for our climate, and that we can actually be part of the solution through participating in this regenerative movement. And find more resources on thekisstheground.com. Follow us on Instagram at kisstheground, and become a member.
And all of those things will be in the show notes on the show page. We'll have links to everything. And my addition to that is, I meant it when I said it gave me hope. And I talk to scientists all day long and twice on Sunday, and sometimes on air and sometimes off air. I say, is it too late? Is there hope? There's so much already up there and out there, and our CO2 emission report card is not great. This movie gives me hope that we can turn things around and have a life that my granddaughter will enjoy living and not live in fear of the danger of climate change. So I thank you for that. Okay, here's my reflection. If you can't tell already, everybody, this movie impacted me greatly. And I was proud that I had interviewed some of the major players in the regenerative agriculture world years before the movie, and that's personal to me. But the movie itself was responsible for some kind of major shift inside of me. And as I said, it gave me hope when some days that's hard. It made me believe that if people become aware, if they get engaged, and if regenerative agriculture sweeps across our farmlands, it will create a ripple effect in ways that we have never seen before. It will impact global warming and climate change and the social justice issues all mixed up in that. And my last thought is that I feel very grateful and very blessed to have been able to see the movie, to know about Ryland Engelhart and his work and the difference he and his team are making for the planet and in turn for me. So that's my reflection. So Ryland, this was delightful and it does give me hope. And thank you for you crossing my path. I really appreciate that.
You're so welcome. Thank you for giving me the space and this wonderful conversation. And my mission is to awaken people to the possibilities of regeneration. You gave me that gift today to awaken, hopefully, your listeners, that they heard something newly and that will lead to a ripple effect, a butterfly effect of their lives and to the greater world at large.
I agree. I think it will happen. Yes, I do. Okay, everybody. Thank you, Ryland. And I hope our paths cross someday at Bioneers or in the Amazon or something, that we get to give each other a real big hug.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thanks, everybody. Go out there and make a difference.